Welcome to the XYZ Experiment podcast. It's Fiona and Dash here. And Dash, today I want to share the story, an update about what happened with my dog Suki. As many listeners would know, I have a German Spitz called Suki who's 4 years old. A lot of people think she's a Pomeranian because Pomeranians are the miniature versions of German Spitzes. And Suki got really, really sick. And I just want listeners to know that she did survive, but I want to talk about what happened during that. Got very, very sick. It had been happening slowly over a period of time, and the vet kept thinking that it was allergies because she kept having these really weird sort of sneezes, and they call it a reverse sneeze, which we thought that's actually what it was. And so she was taking human Zyrtec.
Yeah.
And we had a very bad episode and went back to the vet, and the vet said double the Zyrtec. So we doubled the Zyrtec, and that just kept getting worse and worse and worse over probably a period of a few months, until one day she could barely breathe, and she was vomiting all this foam. It was really, really scary to see because she couldn't tell us what was wrong. But we could see that she was in great distress.
And was deteriorating.
It was deteriorating pretty badly. And this is how much it deteriorated. I rang work and said, I can't come to work. I'm going to have to take my dog to the emergency vets. And I was at the vet at 7 a.m. in the morning. And the vet said, don't even take a seat. We're just going to take her straight into.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. Take her straight into thing. And as I was driving her to the vets, I was literally thinking, please don't die in the car. Like, it was
goodness.
Bad. It was really bad. I'm going to try and talk about it without crying today. Anyway, this is where we were very lucky. We have pet insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have pet insurance who pay 80% of the insurance, and because of that, we could afford to have testing done, because on the first day of the quote, and listeners, this is a true story. This is only 3 weeks ago, it was $5,200 for what was going to have to be done to try and work out what was wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, $5,200, I don't know how many people would have that money.
Yeah, just sitting there
just to spend on a pet. And we rang the insurer and got pre-approval.
I didn't know this happened.
Yeah, so we got pre-approval. So we had to wait for about an hour for pre-approval. And then that day could go ahead and have a CAT scan, and they did her entire body CAT scan, and also the tubes that go down the nose and the mouth, because at that stage they thought something was stuck. They thought something was stuck on her nose or her throat, and that it had grown around it, whatever it was, like caused a lesion that was causing her to not be able to breathe. So $5,200, I knew I had to pay 10% of that, and I said, go ahead. So they went ahead. And they found nothing, absolutely nothing. And we got called to the vets the next day and she was worse. And so the vet's looking at us and saying, we don't know what this is. And we were talking euthanasia by that stage. Anyway, I fell apart.
Yes.
I fell apart like more than, I mean, I've had a dog pass away before where I fell apart, but this was unbelievable how I fell apart. Like, I start crying. It's just crazy.
Right. Yeah.
Like the world would never be bright again. It was terrible. Yeah. Anyway, I said to the vet, we've got $11,000 worth of insurance. Just do anything you can to save her. Anything. Just keep going. And they did, and we saved her. And it turns out she's got this extremely rare condition which the vets in Melbourne had never seen before. So, and I don't know the name, I can't remember, but it had never been seen here in Melbourne before. And it's not related to breed, it's not related to genetics. They don't know what causes it. And they don't know what the survival rate is. But, you know, 3 weeks later, she looks like she's back to her normal self, you know, she looks like normal Suki again, and she's running around like a maniac. But it was, she was in ICU for 5 days, and every day we were told that she was going to be put down that day. And so I didn't go to work for a week. I just couldn't.
Goodness.
I couldn't, because every day I just didn't know. I didn't know if this was the day we were going to put her down.
And that uncertainty must have been just so awful.
Yeah, it was really hard. It was really, really hard. And I realised how bad I was when I heard my husband, who often works from home, make a phone call to his work on a Wednesday afternoon. And his message to his boss was, oh, I need to take today and tomorrow off to look after my wife. She's unwell. And he gets off the phone and I said to him, why didn't you tell your boss the truth that it's the dog? And he goes, I did tell my boss the truth. That's when I realised that I had fallen apart, that yeah. I had totally fallen apart. And it's made me think a lot about the connection you can have not only to human beings but to animals as well. And, you know, I haven't had children and I thought, God, imagine if it was a child, you know, like I can't imagine for parents what that must be like. But, yeah, it was really bad. And so it's – I had a week of – I thought a lot about life, like a lot about life and about – what am I doing with my life? Is my life worthwhile? Like just all these questions about life were coming up for me in quite a serious way.
So it's almost like it caused you to have an existential crisis.
It really did. And it's over my dog.
Yeah.
That it was just like, did I walk her enough? Am I walking myself enough? Am I looking after myself enough? Like self-care. Yeah, am I happy in my career? Is this what I want for my life? I want to sell everything in my house and just, you know, be less bound by things. The most important thing to me is the love of my husband and my dog. Like it was crazy.
Wow.
It was just crazy, all the thoughts going through my head during that time. And still now, the dog's home but because she was on some medications that was causing her to be extremely drowsy, I just didn't want her to be on her own. So I took one of the mattresses off one of our beds and put it in the lounge room. And I'm still sleeping in the lounge room so she doesn't have to jump.
Yeah.
So I'm sleeping on the floor with the dog.
So this is like 3 weeks later.
Yeah, so I'm sleeping on the floor with the dog. I say to my husband last night, maybe I should move back to the bedroom now. She seems to be a lot better. But I just wanted to be there for her. I just wanted to make sure she was okay during the night. I had some very bad night sleeps. I went back to work, of course. Yeah, and just, I don't know, just feeling her pushed up against me with the warmth of her body and just being so thankful for that. It was crazy. It was just, yeah, crazy how much that meant to me. And then I saw that Lewis Hamilton, the Formula One driver, he had to say goodbye to his dog, Roscoe, this week, and he actually cancelled a whole lot of Formula One stuff. And I thought it happens to everybody, like when you form this connection to a pet, it can be that deep. It really, really can be.
Do you feel like society appreciates the connection people can have with their pets?
I think more and more people are starting to understand. Yeah, she's my soul dog or heart dog, they call it. Like for sure she's my soul dog. And so we've always been really great with her. Like I'm talking about a dog, people. We've always been very present with our dog. But things like there would be times when, I mean, she gets walked 3-4 times a day and then she's insisting on a fifth walk. And like in the past I'd just be going, oh, God, we've already done so many walks. And when I say walks, they're just short walks outside. But now she wants to go for 6 or 7. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Chuck on my shoes.
Whatever
just,
you want.
I'm so happy she's here. I'm just so happy she's here. And then like this morning I woke up and she woke me up this morning and like she's lying on my chest and I was just thinking, I'm so happy you're here. I just want to enjoy every possible moment I can with her.
Yeah.
Like I just want to enjoy it, you know. We went for a walk yesterday with her because I've been away for a couple of days and she was just leading the way. And I say to my husband, wherever she wants to go, we'll just go. We'll just follow her around. And then I was saying to him, we went to a pet store because I said, look, she was in that harness for a week in ICU. I want a new harness. I don't want her to be wearing that harness anymore. And, yeah, it's just – it's incredible how a dog can pull on your heartstrings, you know.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. How about you with your dog?
Well, I mean, I absolutely – adore my dog and she is getting very old. And I mean, why I asked that question beforehand is, you know, we don't have children. And so I do feel like our dog is the closest like that we've we've got to having that maternal bond with something, like you're looking after it. And research has shown that dogs have the intelligence of a two-year-old, right? Yeah. So if you put it into context, they feel, they need things, they rely on you, they can learn up to 250 words, you know, all of these different things. They're living, breathing animals who have been bred specifically for that human connection. And I read this incredible book by The Doggist, who has an incredible Instagram account.
I love The Doggist, yeah.
But I read his book called This Dog Will Change Your Life, and so much of it just absolutely resonated. But, you know, I'm watching Pete Uncle, and Pete Uncle is my first dog that is my dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the one who pestered Scott to get her, and she's now turning 13 this month, and she is a little, she's a bit blind, she's a bit deaf, she has dementia, which makes her a lot clingier. You can see that she's a lot more anxious. But I was like, wow, she is, I just still enjoy every season of her. Like, I enjoyed the puppy stage. I really enjoyed the midlife stage. I'm enjoying this stage because there's just, she makes people laugh in our apartment building because she's so sassy and bossy and is like, I'm going to stand at the start, at the front of the lift. No one's going to stand in front of me. I'm going out first. I'm walking on this side. Like, she wouldn't get out of the way of some tradies who needed to be in the building. Like, she's just stood her ground. And there was these,
really?
Yeah, four men carrying stuff. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. And I had to physically lift her up because she's like, what are you doing here? Why are you in this building? Have you got my permission to be in this building? Like, it's just, I imagine her internal dialogue. But what really made it clear to me is this week our apartment had a fire, nothing tragic, but it was on the higher floors to what where we are. So it was probably 7 floors up from us. And I didn't know this, but our building is now set to have like a cascading fire alarm. So when there's a fire, it's the floor that's affected, the floor above and the floor below hear the alarm and are told to evacuate. And then every 5 minutes it continues letting the other floors know. Fire brigades often for apartment buildings get there very quickly. So they're there within 5 minutes usually. Yep. Anyway, Pete Uncle this afternoon, it was like 4 o'clock, was like really distressed. I couldn't hear anything because it wasn't our floor, but she was like hiding under my desk. She was crying. And I kept thinking, this is what she does when the fire alarm drills are going on, like when they're just doing the practice ones. And I was like, what's going on? Then I heard the fire brigade. And so I was like, okay, there is a fire somewhere, but why is she so upset in here? And then I put my head into the corridor and I could hear a fire alarm in our building. So I was like, oh, it is our building. But we can't hear it, and I didn't know if we were going to need to evacuate. But I did know if we did need to evacuate, this is going to be a slow evacuation for Pete, Uncle and I, because firstly, it's 13 flights of stairs I have to carry her down.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
It's a lot. So I was like,
and how much does she weigh? She's
about 8 or 9 kilos, yeah. Right? Yeah. So I thought, well, I'm not going to wait. And either way, I don't want to be in the building if there is a fire, yes. Regardless of where it is. Yeah. I got her ready. I got myself ready. And we started going down the stairs. And they're pretty steep stairs. So I can't walk downstairs without holding on to something.
Yeah.
And so I had to hold onto the banister with my left hand. And I was carrying her under my right. And my right side is my weaker side. So I'm carrying her. And we're walking down 13 flights of stairs. She was so good. She did not wriggle.
Oh, didn't she?
She just stayed calm the whole time. Like, it's like she knew, okay, we're going down. Mummy can – normally I carry her with two hands.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of wrap her to make sure so she was secure. I was carrying her literally with one arm pressed against my body, walk all the way down.
Were there other people in the stairway?
Yeah, and there was bangs going off, right? And so at the time I didn't know what the bangs were, but they sounded like explosions. And they were super loud and I was like, what the hell is happening?
That would have been freaking me out.
It was freaking me out, but it was the fire doors slamming.
Oh,
because they're so heavy and so, you know, going up and down the building, people were coming in and out of the
fire doors.
The stairwell.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were outside for about 30 minutes and, you know, she was like, okay, we're outside, we're safe. And she was walking around saying hello to all the neighbours and whatnot. And then we went back up and she just like...
Could you take the lift back up?
Yeah, thank God.
Okay, okay.
And she was so funny in the lift. She was like, hi, everyone. I was the one that alerted us all to the fact that there was a fire. I honestly think she thought everyone was out there because of her.
Because of her, yeah. Well done. Well,
well
done.
Well done to me.
Yeah.
But like for the rest of the... evening, like she just, you know, she sat on me and she was like, we're okay. Like you could almost feel this connection that you and I, okay, we got out. And I was just like, wow, you're incredible. And I know like there's been times when I've been super, super sick and she's alerted me to hypos or, you know, I've been really unwell and come home from hospital and like she just sleeps pressed against me. Like you're the most vulnerable person in the home. I'm going to protect you. So I just sit there and think, when she does pass away, because they don't live forever, unfortunately, I think I will fall apart.
Yeah.
But I'm so thankful for her. Like I just think, gosh, they're incredible.
They're incredible little creatures that just, I don't know, even seeing the dog now, like it's my husband recently has gone, I think you would say he's almost vegetarian now, and it's because of the dog.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So he's just, we see videos of like pigs that remind us of Suki, you know, doing things that she does, and he's like, how can we eat that? You know, he's gone really strongly that way, and I must say we eat less and less meat because of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I know that sounds really...
No, I feel like... Scott went vegetarian for multiple different reasons and his vegetarian preference, but I think some of it was you're connected to an animal now and you can see it. You can see that they think and they feel and they...
It's just one thing that really surprised me was she had a follow-up checkup this week and I couldn't be there and Maladdin took her to the vets. Anyway, he calls me from the vet room and all I can hear is my dog crying in the background, just crying and crying and crying. And I'm saying to him, what is going on with Suki? What is happening? And he says to me, the moment we got to the door, he said she just lost her shit. So she remembered.
Yeah, absolutely.
She remembered.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to him, try and comfort her somehow. And he goes, I'm trying. And I said, get up and maybe even take her outside and just walk. They'll come and grab you when they need you. Maybe just so she doesn't get in there and she's really distressed. Because she was beside herself. Then once he got into the vet, they called me again because I wanted to be conference call to just talk to the vet about what was happening and find out exactly what it was that she had. And I could still hear her crying in the background and saying to the vet, is she okay? And the vet goes, I'm just glad to see she's like normal. I'm just really glad to see. He said, don't worry about the crying. I'm just really pleased to see she looks like a normal dog today. Like he was thrilled.
Yeah.
But just to hear that just made me think, wow, she's more intelligent than I thought. Like she knew exactly where she was.
Yeah.
And she knew, I don't want to be in this place. And like, yeah, it just blew my mind a bit, actually, that she had obviously very bad memories of what happened during that time there.
And she was left there.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's
the first time we've never been with our dog ever. Like she's never been kenneled or we've never left her behind for someone else to look after her, like ever.
Yeah.
So it's her first time she's ever been without her mum and dad. Like when she was in hospital, they let you come in and spend time with your dogs. They've got this really nice lounge area that you sit in and they would bring her out and put her on my knee and we would just sit there for a couple of hours one day. But then when they go to take her away, it's really distressing.
Yeah.
It's really. But they come and they go, look, it's time. You know, you literally go home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's really distressing because they're looking at you like, don't leave me, you know.
Yeah.
Don't leave me. And you're like, and one day the vet said to me, look, you go. You leave the room instead of us leaving the room.
Yeah.
And then we'll try and calm her down before we leave the room. I'm like, okay. And go close the door behind you. I'm like, okay. It's like full
on.
It's
so sad. I know.
It's a really, you know, the thing is too, is one day I was there because we had a team of vets looking after her because it's such a weird thing that she had. And the vet looked exhausted. She looked absolutely beyond exhausted. And I was thinking, and this is an emergency hospital, so they're seeing the worst stuff, right? Yeah. This isn't just your come in and get your injections done. This is like we're seeing dogs that are dying and cancer. We're putting a lot of dogs down here. And I was thinking, God, her job's tough.
Yeah.
It's a tough gig. I suppose it's the same as working in emergency in hospitals and all that. Anyway, one day the bill got to $11,000 is what we spent. As I said, we have pet insurance. And one day I was paying our portion of the bill and I said to the girl at the front, how do people afford this? I don't understand how people can afford this. And she goes, they don't.
Yeah, like, they don't have to put their dog down.
Yeah, which is really, I feel we were so privileged, like just so privileged to have that. You know?
Yeah.
Probably never be able to get pet insurance again. But
that's true.
But I feel we were just so lucky that, and it's only because when I'd got her, one of my friends had said to me, she'd get pet insurance. I'd never had pet insurance before. She's my fifth dog. And I was like, and they're going, no, vets have got expensive, which of course they have because they're just like dentists. They have all the technology and there's no, you know, no rebates or anything. So, yeah, so I did. And because we had it as an automatic payment, I just hadn't thought about it.
You know what I mean?
I just hadn't thought about this pet insurance we had came out of my husband's account. And thank God we did because I can't imagine. I was talking to my mum this week and she said to me, what would have you done if you hadn't had the pet insurance? And I said to my mum, I would have hit up the family.
Yeah.
I would have just hit up the family and just said, who can contribute
for
me to save my dog?
Yeah.
You know? Who can contribute to
100%.
That? 100%. It's just, yeah, it's must be so hard for vets when the people say they can't afford it or.
And they talk about this in the book that the doggist guy wrote. About because he came from a family of vets. He has come from a family of vets.
Okay.
And he talks about like how much abuse they get from pet owners, but also how challenging it is to put dogs down. Because you go into the profession, and it's any pet really, you go into the profession because you love animals.
Yeah.
And so much of your job is actually then actually having to euthanize animals. And vets have one of the highest suicide rates.
They're the highest now. They've just passed dentists.
I know.
So they're number one.
And they have access to the medications to do it.
Mm.
So it's not an easy job.
It's not an easy job.
And so if anything, like, please treat your vet well. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, understand the stress and how much they have to carry.
The vets were amazing, can I just say. They were incredible. To the point that I'm thinking I must go and do a Google review for them and the insurer.
Yeah.
The insurer was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we all talk about how insurers try to, well, you know, insurers don't have a good reputation. The insurer came to the party and just paid everything.
Yeah.
Like it was to not have that in the background as well was a massive plus for us. I mean, it was still very expensive for us, but it was a really massive, we could do it. You know, I could say to the vet, keep going.
Just
we've got the insurance. Please just save my dog. Keep going. You know, we could have that. Is it privilege? We just were so lucky to have that we could say that, you know, that we could say, please just keep going. There was no guarantee that she was going to be saved. Like, you know, for 4 days, every day, we thought this was it. Even the vets thought this was it. So it's almost like it's a miracle. Like even the vets just going, I can't believe that we've managed to save this dog and still be okay, like be normal, you know what I mean? Like even the vets seem a bit surprised. and the vet was also saying that it was great to learn something new.
Yeah.
To actually see the condition and learn about the condition because next time they'll pick it up a bit quicker. The interesting thing, I mean, I can keep telling you something I found really interesting about it, was she had a total body CAT scan. CAT scan's $3,000 for your dog. And because she's little, they said, we'll just do the whole body, you know, because she's so little, it's not going to cost anything more, we'll do the whole body. And they said to me, she has an extremely small liver for a dog. And they thought at first maybe that was the problem, then realised that it wasn't. But it explains so much about her physical activity. So Suki loves to go to the park and run around, but then all of a sudden she's just like, she can't move anymore. She's got no energy. I often carry Suki home from the park. People laugh, but she's done. She's literally physically done. And it's because she stores almost zero sugar.
Yeah.
Because her liver has no capacity for
it.
Like it can't store it. So when she's done her store, that's
it's
it.
Out.
It's done.
Yeah.
And she's always a dog which I know I can't take. Not that you could take these sorts of dogs hiking, but I can't take her for a big walk. I used to take her a lot with my sister and their dog, and I'd end up carrying her for some of it, which everyone used to laugh about. But we actually now have a physical reason why that happens. I said to the vet, oh, my God, that makes so much sense to me in that she's full of energy and all of a sudden she's not. Like all of a sudden she's done. I mean, I remember on one really long walk I took her, I ended up feeding her jelly beans because I could see that she was literally having a
Did
low
she
blood
eat
sugar.
Them?
Yeah, she ate them. She was having a low blood sugar. I chewed them and then put them into
You should always carry little snacks for her then.
We do.
Yeah.
We normally do. Because and also why she can't go to doggy daycare, because we did that and then she actually had a hypoglycemic event at the doggy daycare.
Yeah.
And we thought it's because she was young and she was running around, and then they were saying, oh, we'll feed her multiple times during the day. But now we know why.
Yeah.
Now we know why. She has a liver that doesn't have the capacity to store very much glucose, so she just doesn't have the energy. Once it's gone, it's gone. It's really fascinating.
I mean, and it's, you know, one thing I really am amazed about as well with the human-dog connection, because what you're describing is you're very in tuned with her and what she needs, and I feel the same with mine. I feel... With Pete Uncle and I, like, I can tell what her whine means. I can tell what some of her behaviours mean. I can anticipate what she needs. I mean, yes, they don't talk, but they do communicate.
They do.
They absolutely communicate with you.
They really do.
I just also, she hates going to the vet because she's had a few operations at the vet. And the vets love her. Like, they do, because she's not an aggressive Dachshund. Some Dachshunds can be quite aggressive.
Yeah.
But she... Her vet in particular, who's done two operations with her, she remembers him. And so he gives her kisses, he gives her treats, you know, he tries very hard, but she's always like, I don't know, you did that to me. When they take her back, they said, you know, she sleeps heaps at home, but they said she just stares intently at all of them the whole time. Like, she will not rest there.
Really?
Which was, like, we've never had to leave her overnight, thank goodness, so far. But I just think, God, she wouldn't sleep unless she was really, really
She'd
unwell.
She'd come home and just sleep for days.
She just watches them, like, what are you doing? I don't trust you people. So, you know, they're very intuitive.
It's just... It's like when Suki got home from the vets, she slept for days. Like, I rang the vet and said, I'm a bit worried. And they said, no, she's just exhausted.
Yeah.
She's absolute, just let her sleep. I'm like, okay.
Back in a familiar, safe environment.
Just let her sleep and just, you know, feed her when she will. And like, just, yeah, like we'd have to wake her up to feed her because she'd need her medicine and just, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, It's incredible how connected you can be to a pet. And, you know, the one thing I realised during it, though, is the love of my husband as well. Just the how much we held each other in that space. That was really nice as well. Just these things happen. And, yeah, so that was really good to know that we were there for each other. And, yeah.
And he picked up on your cues.
Yeah. He really did. It was really lovely. So, anyway.
But, you know, just to finish off, you know, Dr. Jane Goodall passed away.
Yeah.
And she was asked in so many interviews, oh, I assume, like, chimpanzees are your favourite animal. Mm. And she said, no, chimpanzees are very similar to humans and there are some that are not that nice. And she said, my favourite animal is a dog because a dog will give you unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And basically there isn't a dog that... is not nice, you know, unless they're trained specifically, but at their core, dogs are incredible.
Loving creatures.
Loving creatures. And they have an incredible bond with their humans.
Mm.
So I'm glad Suki's okay.
I'm glad she's okay too.
Yeah.
Hi, Fiona here. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the XYZ Experiment podcast. And don't forget to leave a rating and review. If you enjoyed our show, tell all your friends and family and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at the XYZ Experiment for all the latest updates and news. Our original music was composed and performed by Luke Champion.